We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovic. Joining me today is David Brady, former money manager, Sprott Money contributor, advisor to 4779 Capital, and author of the FIPEST Report Substack. David, how are you today?
Excellent. Have you seen gold and silver lately?
In our pre-chat this morning, it's kind of, in some ways, it seems like there's almost nothing to talk about because we just want to sit back with some popcorn and watch this. You know, you and I have been fortunate, I guess, to have spoken about this many times over the last 4 years. And at this point, it's just kind of like we have to sit back and be patient to see how some of these things play out, right?
Exactly. I mean, the train has finally arrived and it's fast leaving the station. We've been talking about the ups and downs for quite some time, but now it seems to be coming unidirectional, which is up. I don't think that's going to be the case forever, but I do think that there will be pullbacks along the way. There always is. But you can sense the momentum is there. I mean, like with any asset that is suppressed for some length of time, when that suppression ends, when it breaks through it, like a coil spring, you see what happens next. And that's what we're seeing. Gold and silver, you've heard a lot of people on Twitter and elsewhere, you know, the naysayers say, oh, it's a waste of time, this and that, you know, it's never going up, it's manipulated or not, it's just dead money. That's the suppression. That's what it was designed to do, is to keep gold and silver low so nobody wants it. But eventually, those fundamentals kick in, and that's what we're seeing now, and it breaks through that suppression. And when it does, it explodes higher. So we're going to have this podcast today, and it's, you know, I'm hopeful that it's going to be valuable to people. But I don't know what to say, really, because there are going to be pullbacks, and we can talk about some of the events that will cause those pullbacks. But when the market takes a life of its own and decides to just go straight up, it's very difficult to jump on board or know when to jump on board, because it's a one way ticket. Now, there will be pullbacks, as I said, but they're going to be very difficult to identify, and you have to grab them when they come. That's what I believe. Mm-hmm. Now, with regard to the events that could cause a big pullback, I'm still waiting for one now, because we've had a nice move up in gold and silver and the miners, and they're due a wave two retracement based on the Elliott waves I'm looking at. And we may get a minuscule one. And then you get a chance to jump on board, but it's looking challenging, you know, to get any kind of pullback in the near term, unless it's something like a stock market crash. And what I mean by that, a crash, you know, I hate that term, a correction of 20 to 30% almost overnight, like a flash crash, much like March 2020. That would drag down gold and silver and the miners in particular, because they are stocks. And especially the ones that I look at, the high betas, because high beta is a two-way street. And the high beta, you'll get crushed in those stocks if we do get a stock market correction overnight. That is one example of something that could pull down the market. But I would consider that a gift. Like a Christmas gift that you've always wanted, because if March 2020 and October 2008 are any guide, you know what's going to happen next. The Fed's going to cut rates. They're going to return to QE. And what do you think that does for gold and silver, which has already got momentum? I mean, parabolic, is that a word I could use? I mean, that's what we're looking at right now. So I'll stop there. But my concern is that we are going to get pullbacks. We could get big ones, but you're going to have an event to do that. But I think the train has left the station.
David, you mentioned, let's say, the financial instability of 2008 or 2020. You know, you mentioned the wars, the banking crisis. The Fed seems to be, you know, in a way, waiting for something to react to. We're in this no man's land of sorts where we've seen the rate hikes to combat the inflation, yet the full consequences of the hikes, I think, have yet to be felt. So, you know, all that being said, is there an outcome of this time that doesn't end in the U.S. government cutting rates and printing more to support whatever turn comes next?
Is there a situation where, just so I understand the question, that the Fed does not cut rates and does not print to address a crisis? Is that the question? Yes, but I don't think it's next time around. I think they will go full-blown QE insanity on steroids and cut rates back to zero, maybe negative, who knows. But when will they not respond with rate cuts and QE? When they no longer work. When they are pumping money into the system and the stock market continues to fall, the economy continues to deteriorate, unemployment continues to soar, then all they're doing is creating inflation, hyperinflation potentially. And that's when they pull the plug. Game over. The end.
And do you think that, you know, let's talk a little bit about how they, you know, quote unquote, pull the plug. Is that something that is a choice of their making, or is that something that is forced upon them by the markets and, you know, maybe other countries dumping treasuries or what have you?
I think it's both. They caused it. So, you know, they caused it. So it's of their own making, but they're going to get help elsewhere. Yeah, it will be foreigners dumping not just U.S. treasuries, U.S. stocks, U.S. real estate. They want out of the dollar. They don't want to have anything to do with U.S. assets. The same reason. I was going to talk about this today, and I'm going to pivot here for a second. Some of you may have noticed that the dollar and the 10-year yield had a nice rally. The dollar's after bouncing back off 100, and now it's up, looks like it's going to 105, 105.50, maybe as high as 106.50. Same with yields. The yields are back to 430s, the 10-year yield. It could go up to 460 to 70. Yet gold and silver are going up at the same time. Somebody explain that to me. Gold and the dollar and 10-year yield are all going up at the same time. That, to me, I'm going to, you know, I'll just say it. I believe that is a sign of a loss of confidence in the U.S. in general, in the U.S. fiscal policy, the Fed and its monetary policy, and thereby U.S. treasuries, U.S. stocks, and then ultimately the dollar. The dollar is going up, and yet gold and silver are going ballistic. At least right now they are. And so are the, how's the 10-year yield? There's a loss of confidence. And does that sound strange? Not to me. If you look at what's going on around in the world, let's use North America. You're seeing the sale of guns went through the roof, ammunition, people leaving the cities, buying off-grid properties, buying emergency food. They're all getting ready for something. And if there's another banking crisis, for example, they've seen what happened before to Silicon Valley Bank and a couple of other banks. There's a risk to their cash in the bank. What happens if the stock market collapses? What happens if, you know, bond markets, the value of those bonds are hyperinflated away? People are running to tangible assets. Land is one of them, but the other one is physical metals. And that's a loss of confidence in the system in general. So it's not just about data and, you know, the Fed anymore and, you know, what the dollar and 10-year are doing on any particular day, et cetera, or even the stock market. there's a general loss of confidence, in my opinion, in not just the US, in this fiat system around the world. And where are they going for safety? Gold and silver. Mm-hmm. And I would argue Bitcoin as well.
David, do you think that, you know, we can separate out where this demand is coming from? You know, you said that this is a loss of confidence, but is it being driven by particular sectors of the market that are showing that loss of confidence?
Well, that's the big question right now. What's driving this? There's no obvious catalyst right now for why gold and silver are taking off. We can discuss levels and so forth, but there's no clear catalyst at this point. Like, there's no Fed 180 to rate cuts and QE. The only thing I can come up with, because it isn't retail, but that's obvious, is that there are some big players out there. And I've seen a few people mention the Chinese and the price of gold in China being higher than it is here in North America. And that could be a factor in that the Chinese and the Indians, and maybe even Russia as well, and other central banks around the world have been buying for quite some time. Maybe big players are coming in here and they are driving the market north. That would explain it. I don't have any proof of that. But the only proof I would say is inventories around the world in COMEX and the LBMA in Shanghai are being drained. That would add credence to it. But we don't know if the person on the other side is the PBOC in China. Or the Russian Central Bank or the Indian Central Bank, but you know, it would have to be somebody big to drive it the way it's going without a big catalyst to do so, in my opinion. That's the only conceivable answer that I have, along with the loss of confidence, but it wouldn't be retail alone. It'd be loss of confidence on the part of other powers around the world, and they're hedging their bets against the dollar, trying to protect themselves by buying gold and silver. They know what's coming.
How about if we look at, let's say, the commitment of traders reports? Like, what does that positioning of these traders look like? And has this trend been changing over the recent past here?
Well, let's look at the data. This is my deal. And this is why I've been calling for pullbacks that haven't happened. When a market is suppressed for quite some time, much like gold and silver have been, when it breaks out, it gets into a trend, strong trend, strong upward trend. And the data can be left behind. Said differently, the sentiment can become extreme bullish, which is it's a contrarian signal, meaning that it's going to go down, because when everybody's bullish, they tend to be wrong. The technicals are extreme overbought. The positioning on the COT data is the funds are massively long and racing to add even more longs, and the banks are massively short and racing to add even more shorts. For example, the bank's recent position was the highest short position, the highest since March 2022. What happened in March 2022? Well, in gold, it went down from 2079, I believe, down to 1618. And silver fared similarly. So you've got all of the data. You've got the technical, you've got the sentiment, you've got the COT data. You've got dollar and 10-year yield going up now. That's the intermarket analysis. Fundamentals, the Fed has said that the next move in rates is down. They've said that they're going to slow QT. They keep delaying this, but they've said that that's the case. So gold and silver, no, that's coming. That's all baked into the cake. So what else have I got left? Elliott Waves suggests that we should get a pullback. It's been a little stretched here now. everything is pointing that to a pullback and a sizable one. What are gold and silver doing? See, yeah, I'm not listening to you anymore. It's just going. So I don't know who's driving it, Tom. I'd be lying if I said I did know who it was, but I believe there's some big players involved here now driving this. Because if you were to look at the data, we should be, you know, correcting 20, 30% in gold and silver, and then going up, you know, to get the ammunition and the fuel to go even higher. But we're not doing that. It's just breaking over and going higher and higher. And any pullback is like a few pennies. Now, that will change, but I think it will be, it'll need to be a significant event, like a stock market crash of 20, 30% overnight, to actually cause a significant drop. Mm-hmm. Because all the data is arguing for it, but it can stay that way for some time. Mm-hmm. We saw that in 2018, by the way, mm-hmm. when the U.S. trade war was going on with China. All the data was saying that, you know, it's the bottom. And it just kept going down. I mean, the data was stretched back in 2018. And I know I'm talking about the downside versus the upside now. But back in 2018, it was so stretched on the downside that, including myself and other people, I won't name names, but a lot of well-known analysts were saying, oh, you know, the banks are long, the funds are short, the sentiment's in the toilet, the technicals are extreme oversold. That was in May. When did we bottom? August. I mean, that's what a trend can do. It can annihilate the data. It can ignore it for quite a long time. But eventually the data regains its strength, as it did after August 2018. But that's the situation that we're in. And that's why it's hard to figure out what's going to happen next. That's why, from my perspective, it's good to take a big step back and look what's going on and what could change things. And that's why I talk about a stock market crash, or you know, it could be a cyber attack. They could be one and the same. Mm-hmm. And that's what causes it to come off. But if I look at the big picture with the loss of confidence that I believe is taking place and the movement to safety, I think those events are gifts. They're only short-term dislocations, temporary effects, because like in March 2020 and in October 2008, gold and silver took off because they knew what was coming next. And I think this is the same scenario playing out. We just haven't had the correction yet, but it's coming. And, you know, like anybody else, if you see one thing and you're like, oh, wow, you know, they're going to do QE like they did 2008. Gold and silver saw it 6 months in advance. Then in March 2020, even I saw it. I said it in a public article for Sprott Money that, you know, 3 weeks ahead of time, they're going to print like no tomorrow. And that's exactly what they did. Is it a surprise that gold and silver are now anticipating it, even before it actually happens, even before it's necessary? Because they see the writing on the wall, especially the big boys. They know what's going on. So I believe that is a strong argument for why this is happening right now. But and I feel for the people who are not on board, because it's going to be hard to get in here. Mm-hmm. The worst thing that could happen to you is like, oh, what the heck? I just jump in now. And you jump in at 2,300 or 2,400 gold, and then you watch it drop to 2,100 because the stock market fell. I can't help you. I don't know.
I'd like to get to talking a little bit about, you know, maybe establishing a position or building more of a position at this point. But David, I want to get your thoughts on why you're targeting, let's say, this 20 to 30% stock market drop. Is that just because of the, let's say, the concentration in these, you know, the Mag 7? Is it because of, you know, certain technical factors, or is it just, you know, that we're due for one?
Oh, God. We could have a whole podcast on this one. Now, I let my peers who focus on the stock market answer that question, but I will give my two cents. But I stay away from stocks because I stay away from any asset I think is a complete waste of time, because I believe that they're going to get absolutely annihilated in the next few years. So I'm not going to play for pennies up or down in the stock market, in the bond market, in real estate. I'm out of all of them. I play only in the gold and silver space, and there's a reason why. I think they're going into a bubble, by contrast. So to answer your question, okay, let's look at the technical. Just run a chart of a daily chart for the S&P, for example. That's all you'll see. That doesn't go on forever. Draw a line, trend line underneath it. When it breaks, that's something to watch. If we fall back below 5,000, I think we're in deep trouble. The 2-year, 10-year spread is currently negative. The dot-com bust and the 2008 were predicted by the yield curve, both of them. When the hockey stick occurred, basically means it went from minus a negative 10-year, minus a 2-year was negative, turned from negative to positive, and you get this hockey stick on the yield curve. And that'll be a sign that the stock market is in deep trouble, if history is a precedent, which I believe it is. It's extreme overbought. It's the sentiment is extreme bullish. Is anybody hedging the VIX? They're just, everything's extreme. Much like it's extreme in gold and silver now, but that's justified in my opinion. But in the stock market, it's extreme overvalued. I mean, the valuations are ridiculous. And some of the things going on with NVIDIA, I'm not even going to get into, but it's horrendously overvalued. And I have to be careful with what I say here. I believe the market is being manipulated up with liquidity to enable certain people to sell at attractive prices and get out of the market, dump their junk, I call it. And what I can say outright is that there's a huge amount of insider selling going on. Bezos has been selling Amazon stock. Zuckerberg has been selling. Gates has already sold a bunch. You've got Diamond getting on board recently. Peter Thiel is selling. All these guys are all selling in and around the same time in a space of a year. Mm-hmm. What did they know? So my point is, you could write a book on this. There are so many reasons why it should go down and very few for why it should go up. Mm-hmm. That's the exact opposite of what's going on in gold and silver. Mm-hmm. And there's so many reasons why it should go up. And there's only a few why it should fall down. Like I mentioned, a stock market crash or a cyber attack or another pandemic or something like that. But other than that, such a big event, there isn't much else to explain why gold and silver should go down. Mm-hmm. So I hope that answers your question. I don't follow it because I think stocks are one of the many places I don't want to be in going forward. Bonds, real estate, I could go on and on. I steer clear of that. I focus almost exclusively on gold and silver, maybe buying some land, and maybe having some Bitcoin as well.
Mm-hmm. So, David, you know, considering that gold is at all-time highs here, and it seems to be making new ones every, you know, other day, is it possible that we see retail, let's say, skip physical gold and maybe buy some silver and miners instead, as they're relatively much cheaper when compared to the metal that, you know, keeps making all new time highs here?
Yeah, I think it's a mistake to try to go to other vehicles to get into this rally in gold and silver. I'll give you an example. Miners. I love the high beta miners in the short term. But if the world's going to hell in a handbasket, and that's why gold and silver is going up, and there's a loss of confidence in fiat currencies, not just the dollar, but all of them. The one place you want to be is in gold and silver. And I believe that's the... Sorry, Tom, remind me what the question was.
Talking about, you know, instead of getting into gold at all-time highs, yes, if people are going to get into silver and miners instead.
Yes, is that if the world goes to hell in a handbasket, there's a very real chance that the mines will be nationalized. Yeah, I'm not saying they are going to be, but if Canada's struggling, US is struggling, and other countries around the world are struggling, you're already seeing central banks buying gold and silver. Maybe they don't have enough of it, and they decide to nationalize the mines so that they can get the gold and silver directly. And what are you going to get? You're going to get, when you sell your miners, or they pay you out, you're going to get fiat currency that's basically worthless. And the whole reason you're in gold and silver metals is to avoid digital or fiat currency, whatever form it is, paper, fiat currency. Yeah, that's what you're getting at the end when you sell your miners. That's the same thing you were trying to avoid. So that's why I don't think it's a great vehicle to use long-term by any stretch of the imagination. Whether it's nationalized or you sell it and all you're getting is the thing that you didn't want in the first place, which is the fiat currency because it's worthless. And I'd avoid ETFs as well for the same reason, even if they're gold or silver, because in many cases you're not going to be able to get those metals distributed to you. You can't take ownership. You've got a piece of paper. So I would recommend, as I always say, and especially in the numerous articles I shared up to this point, I always mention the term physical. Now, if for those who have limited means, yeah, gold's going to be off the table because it'll cost you, here in Canada, it'll cost you $3,500 to $4,000 to buy one coin. But silver is still relatively available. Mm-hmm. To people. I mean, you can stack up. You don't have to buy 100 ounces. You can buy 1-2 ounces a week that way. That, for me, is the way to go, because not only do you have it, there's no risk of nationalization. You can use it. You can buy things with it. You know, I bought a shipping container with the person who was selling it to me wanted bullion, and he took it. Mm-hmm. So when people are surprised that people are using bullion in trade, I'm like, what? No, I've already done this. People are asking. The people who are selling want it. There's no counterparty risk. You own it, and that's the thing. It's in your hand. So. No, I would only recommend physical, and to the extent that your means are limited, physical silver. Now I'm sure they're going to make smaller denominations. They're not doing it yet, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the mint to move off ounces, and then they'd be getting like penny ones. Like, similar to what they do in gold with the little bricks, tiny little pieces. There will always be a way to get this stuff. Now Costco's selling it, and it was started in the US. They're doing it here in Canada as well. It's interesting that they're selling gold in the US, but they're selling the silver in Canada. It speaks volumes to the, the means in each country these days. Mm-hmm.
So is that, let's say, you know, buying some physical silver, you know, when you said, I believe it was at the beginning of February, that you were all in, David, what does that mean, you know, for the average person, just so that we can make that explicit, rather than, you know, people running in to try to establish these positions, as you warned against just now.
Well, let me share what I did. I started buying gold and silver back in the second half of 2015. And my breakdown between the two, the physical metals, is significantly in favor of silver in terms of weight and dollar amount. Now, that's my physical component. But my physical metals, in terms of my entire portfolio, represent, depending on the day, anywhere between 70 to 80% of my entire portfolio. I retain another 15% for trading in the miners, especially, and because I want, I'm using these miners to add juice to my portfolio. I go even deeper and I focus on what I call the high beta miners, meaning that when silver in particular goes up, the miners that consistently go up alongside silver, so you have that consistency in terms of the correlation, but go have a beta of 2, preferably 3, or even 4 relative to silver. So when silver goes up 20%, McEwen goes up 80%. Mm-hmm. Now, the risk with that is if it goes the opposite direction and the silver goes down 20%, you lose 80%. So you've got to keep that in mind. But that's a trade. And I use, that's why I use 15% of my portfolio for trading the miners. Emphasis trading. The physical metals are investments. They're collecting dust. That dust enables me to take positions that other people would not be able to do because they don't have money in the bank over here, and they're playing with that, the house's money, if you will, based on the gains that I have since I started buying in 2015 and ever since. That gives me a cushion to play with these, I shouldn't use the word play, to trade in these miners, high beta miners, high risk miners.
Because you have built that underlying foundation of physical first, right? And then you've sized that position accordingly.
Yeah, just to use an example, say I 100,000, say I have 100,000 in gold, physical gold and silver, and that's what it costs me to buy what I have today. But since then, it's doubled. So it's 200,000 now today. I've gotten unrealized gains. Well, I can use those unrealized gains to absorb losses that I incur in the miners, should I get it wrong. So that gives me a cushion to take that risk. But a person who doesn't have that, say they have, you know, their 20,000 in their bank account, they're listening to David Brady, and they say, oh, I'm going to follow what he's doing. I'm going to buy all these high beta miners. And next week they all, you know, silver drops 10% and they've bought McEwen, they've bought Harmony, they've bought Gatto, and they're all down 40%. He's got no cushion to cover that. I do. Yeah, so you have to be careful that it's about willingness and ability to take on that risk. I have it, others don't. So I'm very careful to warn people about that. But you ask me a question when I say, when you say all in, what does that mean? It means that I'm 80% allocated to physical metals. I have 15% fully allocated to trades in the high beta miners, and I have 5% piece of cash to play with in and out that I use. That's it.
Well, I appreciate you going through, you know, breaking that down, because I think it's important to understand, you know, where that positioning comes from and how to, let's say, build that safety into the portfolio. Because, you know, for as long as we've been talking about this, that is how long I think that it takes for this thesis to play out, right? Is to be able to understand when nobody cares about the metal, when nobody's talking about it, when it's not making new all-time highs, when you have to hold your nose to buy it, and then, you know, scaling in over time. I think that's, you know, always important to remember and understand, to be able to, again, minimize that risk, which is the whole name of the game when I think buying gold and silver.
Yeah, it's about the big picture first and foremost. And I'm going back to 2015. And back in 2015, everything that's happening today is no surprise to me. I'll put it that way. And I'm not looking for a quick win. I'm looking for something that will last for years, potentially decades. And to me, it was obvious that, you know, physical gold and silver are, you know, the place to be. Whereas stocks, bonds, real estate, no. They're overvalued. It's simply that. Back to Mike Maloney's book, fantastic book on gold and silver. You invest in the undervalued and you sell the overvalued. Mm-hmm. Well, you tell me those six stocks in the stock market and the S&P and the NASDAQ, including NVIDIA and the other five, you think they're undervalued or overvalued? To me, they're extraordinarily overvalued. Mm-hmm. Whereas gold and silver, even with the gains that it's got so far, is still dramatically undervalued. And I think there's a whole bunch of people who will agree with this, peers of mine, that silver is perhaps the most undervalued asset on earth today. And so buying it in 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, buying it for years, stacking, as they like to call it. I hate that term. But anyway, buying for years, knowing that, not knowing, but having a fairly strong conviction mm-hmm. that it's going to play out that gold and silver are going to blast off because this fiat debt experiment going on in the world is not going to last. It's unsustainable. There's a diminishing marginal return on debt to the point now where you have to generate more debt. Yep. For every dollar of GDP growth, you have to generate debt of $2. Wait, so I borrow money, I'm leveraging myself, and I get less of a return than the risk that I'm taking. Those are not exact numbers. I'm just giving an example that for every $2 of debt, you're only getting $1 GDP growth. That's unsustainable. Because how do you pay off the debt? If your debt's going up faster than your GDP, it's obvious what's going to happen. So anyway, first is to have the big picture. And then the first thing you buy is physical gold and silver. You don't jump straight into high beta miners. You start a base. And I would recommend that base be silver because it's still available. Jumping into gold now, for most people, is unattainable. I mean, what, you're going to buy 5 ounces of gold? Great. But you can buy, I'm not even going to try and do the math on the silver, but like hundreds of coins of silver by comparison. Mm-hmm. So I recommend silver.
Just looking at the ratio, right? It's about somewhere between 85 to 90 to 1.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I'm going. So hundreds of coins by contrast. And you can use it to buy stuff. You can use it in trade. It's physical. You own it. You have it in your hands. And it's going to, you know, they could confiscate it, but it's going to be more difficult. I would think what would be easier for them to do is to put a massive tax on any sale of gold and silver in the future. So like if you want to use it in any trade, you're going to pay 50% VAT, mm-hmm. something along those lines. But we'll see. But that's the way I would do it. I would start with the physical silver. Once you have your base established, then go to miners, because the miners may not be around in the future. You may not be able to own them. If you do have massive gains, you may want to sell them and you still get fiat currency. But mm-hmm. silver will go up to, so will gold, but you can use that in trade. You don't, unlike the miners where you have to sell it to get the dollars to buy something, you can use gold and silver in trade. You can use it in barter and it will do extremely well. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would recommend.
I had another guest the other day basically lay out his case for saying that confiscation was basically a moot point. at this point because there is such little investment in it that it just doesn't make sense to actually, you know, fix anything at that point.
Yeah, the other argument would be, so if, well, you know, I think I know the answer to this question, but if you, so few people own it and they decide to try and confiscate it, what, are you going to confiscate Bezos's as well? Or, you know, where's the, how do you determine who's is to be confiscated and who's isn't? You know, they, I always argued that if these guys, the establishment, wanted to keep gold and silver out of the hands of the peasants, what they would do is drive the price up. I don't know why they're suppressing it. Why don't you make it unattainable? Mm-hmm. Now, maybe that's what they're doing now. You know,
maybe they finally got the memo.
Yeah, because if you don't want anybody owning this, make it unaffordable. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how you do it. But and maybe that is exactly what's going on now. But given the state of the world, I do believe there's a loss of confidence in government institutions, and you can see it by their actions, what people are doing. And I think this is just another one. And the big players, the Chinese, the Indians, the Russians, they've already been doing this for years. We won't know this, but now they're, maybe they're the ones driving the boat. Mm-hmm. And that's pushing up gold and silver prices. Now, I want to say that we've talked about like who's driving this, who's this, and what. In the background, this has been coming for quite some time, and there's a reason why gold and silver are anticipating this. It isn't just a stock market crash. The banking crisis, we know that's coming. The Fed has already said there's still stress in the banking system. Quote, wars. You got Ukraine. You've got the Middle East. Maybe Taiwan. World War III. I think Putin warned recently that he would use nuclear weapons in certain circumstances. Anyway, those are, we know how gold and silver respond to war. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned the loss of confidence in the system. There are so many reasons why gold and silver go up, and there are a lot of reasons why stocks should go south, and bonds and real estate with it. And we haven't even talked about the economy. You know, I find it humorous, I will put it. That's not the word I want, but basically, the economy, listening to Powell say the economy is doing great and everything's wonderful and we're on track and soft landing, all this nonsense. As far as I'm concerned, the economy is on life support. Because you're seeing, you know, I'll give you the obvious ones. You got commercial real estate and so forth, but there's, you know, consumer spending is falling. Credit card balances are at near record highs. The costs on those credit cards are enormous. People are using new cards to pay off the interest on the fully loaded cards that they already have. Delinquencies are rising. Auto repos too. You got bankruptcy soaring. This is all of the data under the hood. We're seeing these GDP numbers. Oh, everything's great. You know, retail sales. Oh, no. But when you go under the hood, you see the real world. Median home sales. This is a good one. You know, the median home sale price in the United States is dropping faster now than it did in 2008.
Oh.
You can run it. Look at it on
Fed. Quite the stat, yeah.
It's right there. Everybody say, oh, the housing market's solid. And so go look at it. It's there. It's the data. Employment, the labor market's weakening. I love these little anecdotes. You saw that Newsom raised the minimum wage in California to $20. And what happened next? The fast food joints just laid everybody off, and they're going to replace them with robots and automation. Now, if that isn't by design, I don't know what is. But anyway. My point is that people are struggling, and I see it left and right here in Canada as well. The economy is not strong. It's on life support is the best way I can describe it. And when the stock market does turn down and the Fed responds, it'll be a temporary measure. And I do believe the Fed will respond because there's an election coming in November. And you could even see the stock market go up to a new higher high. But once whoever's elected is elected, down it goes. Mm-hmm. And that's how I see things playing out. And again, all of this is fantastic for gold and silver. Mm-hmm.
Such an optimistic picture you're painting there for us, David.
Well, it's not just me. I'm just telling you like I see it, because I see what's going on with the economy. I see what people are doing. Mm-hmm. Just talking to people over Easter. And, there is a lot of people are waking up to it. There's a lot more like-minded people. I have a problem meeting people that are not like-minded. I don't know. I seem to be a magnet for everybody who thinks the same way, which is an echo chamber, but it's quite a lot of people. But it's gloomy, yes, but I do think we're going to come out the other end. I really do. I won't go into it any more than that, but we're talking about protecting ourselves financially, at least in the near term and going forward. And in order to do that, you'd have to think tangible assets. So we've talked about gold and silver. Well, land is another good one, farmland in particular. Mm-hmm. So you can grow your own food. So gloomy, yeah, I would say realistic is a better word. And as I've always said to my father, who said I was nuts about some of the things that I'm doing, I said, okay, Dad, I'd be happy to be wrong. Because if I'm wrong, then everything's just fine. Mm-hmm. But if I'm not wrong and I'm right, I'll be better off than the most. And when you're a father and a husband and you've got to look after your kids, you take the latter approach.
Yeah, David, I was going to say, I say that in jest, obviously, because, you know, it's important. Even, you know, as we said before we hit record this here this morning, it's like, what is there to talk about? Now we're living through what we have seen, what we have, you know, prepared for in a lot of ways financially that we've been talking about for so many years. And now it's just, you know, we're just eating the popcorn, watching it play out. And I think that discussion is important to have to understand, you know, where we've come from to get to where we are.
Absolutely. I was just going to say the only downside of taking this approach is that I'm the butt of jokes at Christmas dinners going forward and being out a few pennies. And if that's the worst case, I'll take that every day and twice on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I'm doing it. So anyway, going back to these markets, the only difficulty is when to jump in. I get this question myself a lot, and I would say if you're not already in, I would throw something at it. I mean, I've had articles where I've said, like, out loud, you know, buy some gold and silver now, but get some as insurance. 20%, 30%, 50% of any loose cash that you have, do that. And then if it does drop back with a stock market crash or a cyber attack or whatever is the event that causes the pullback, then roll out the other 50%, get this, buy the silver, physical silver, and then sit tight, let it run, go off, do something, enjoy yourself, grow some food, whatever, and you'll be okay. That would be my recommendation for people who are not in. For people like me, it's awesome. The money just keeps rolling in. It's invisible, but it's...
Yeah, all the unrealized yes. Money, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but I honestly got a lot of stick recently in, I think it was last week. I said we may never see these prices ever again. Mm-hmm. And people come, "Oh, you said that before." And I said, "Yeah, we haven't seen those ones again. We're higher than those." Mm-hmm. They show me where we went below those. And then now look at it now, and I honestly believe that's the case. Even with a stock market crash, I believe, given what happened in 2008 and 2020, that the pullback this time will be much, it'll be sharp, it'll be shallow, in the sense that it'll drop, but it won't drop precipitously like it did in March 2020 and in 2008. Mm-hmm. It'll be a garden variety pullback of maybe $100 in gold, maybe 200, and then off it goes again. Mm-hmm. That's how I see it. So if you get that chance, jump all over it. But other than that, if you don't, buy some silver, physical silver. Just buy some, even one of those little, you get these tubes with about 20 in them. Just buy, 20 coins, 10 coins, mm-hmm. and then keep adding going forward. Mm-hmm. You won't regret it.
Well, David, I think that's a good place to wrap up for today. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we do?
No, I think that basically covered it, other than, I'm sorry I couldn't be a bit more definitive about what to do next. It's just that we're in potentially in bubble territory, parabolic mode. We will get pullbacks, but other than that, I can't say. I've been trying to call pullbacks for a while here on a micro basis, and I've been wrong. Mm-hmm. I've been wrong, but we will get a pullback, but it may require a big event to drive it. Mm-hmm. And if we get it, it's not a bad thing, unless you're in the stock market. But if you're looking to buy gold and silver or miners, it's going to be a gift. Mm-hmm. Grab it.
Absolutely. All of David's work is available at fipestreport.substack.com, 4779capital.com, and of course, great Twitter follow at Global Pro Trader. David, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate getting to have these conversations through the years and through the timeline of watching these markets.
Yeah, well, if you've got any popcorn over there, can you send me some over? Because I'm running out, because it's fun to watch. It is. After all these years, it's starting to finally play out. But let me finish on this point. It's just the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's still just the beginning. I won't mention his name, but another peer of mine said, $100 silver is a slam dunk. I agree with him. And I think many others do too. We're looking at 40 to 60 in silver is a gimme at this point. Gold, 5,000, 10,000. Yeah, it's doable now. At high beta miners, I just don't know if they will still be around, but they're going to go through the stratosphere. But the numbers are fantastic going forward. The point is, you're not getting in too late now. The train has left the station, but it's nowhere near its destination. Mm-hmm. So you've still got a time to jump on board. And so pick the amount that you feel comfortable with, 50% or less, and buy some. You won't regret it.
Excellent. Thanks again, David.
Thanks very much, Tom. Take care.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.